The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Contrary-minded, nay. Motion is carried. Barring any more notices of motion, we'll now move on to oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 12:11. We'll conclude at 1:11. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, there are currently four companies that hold onshore exploration and production licenses here in Nova Scotia. Those are licenses that will soon become worthless. My question to the Premier, what discussions has his government had with these four companies about their future in our province?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I will ask the Minister of Energy to respond.
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Mr. Speaker, I appreciate the question. As the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition would know, we not only have had discussions with those companies, but one has said that the one who's most active has actually said that the moratorium will not affect their plans and that they look forward to working within those rules. Anything beyond that, of course, would be proprietary company information that would be up to them to share that I wouldn't be able to share, and I'm sure he understands that.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In fact, one of those companies, St. Brendan's Exploration, actually wrote a submission to the Wheeler expert panel. And their president, Edwin McDonald, wrote to the panel on behalf of his company, and I quote, "St. Brendan's has been patiently observing the review process for the past 2 years. We anticipate that established regulations will facilitate our capital investment decisions." I'll ask the Premier, has the government asked St. Brendan's to stay in the province, or is the close for business sign flashing for them too?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'm very glad the member actually brought up St. Brendan's, because they're the ones who have said that they look forward to working within these regulations. They were the ones that issued the statement, and in fact, the activities they use do not use hydraulic fracturing.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the fact is that St. Brendan's had a lot to say about the government's ban on new shale gas development, new jobs in our province. Many members of the government have suggested that there is little onshore potential anyway. They'll go find out, but that they don't anticipate there maybe is that much gas, quite the contrary to what the Wheeler report estimated. But my point, Mr. Speaker, is that prior to the announced ban by the government, Edwin McDonald of St. Brendan's said, and I quote, "St. Brendan's sees substantial potential for hydrocarbon development onshore Nova Scotia and accepts the challenge of developing the industry within the bounds of existing and future regulations." Mr. Speaker, this company was looking to invest millions of dollars in rural Nova Scotia, but the government said no to shale gas development despite recommendations from its own experts and from companies like St. Brendan's that are willing to actually create jobs in the province. I asked the Premier, in light of St. Brendan's optimism of only a few months ago, why has the government turned their backs on new employers like Edwin McDonald?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I know it's inconvenient when you have your second supplementary written and you get an answer that doesn't work for it. Mr. Speaker, St. Brendan's, in fact... Mr. Speaker, I have spoken with St. Brendan's, and our staff have spoken with St. Brendan's. They have actually issued a public statement since the announcement by the government stating that they look forward to working within those regulations. In fact, they are still excited about the opportunities in Nova Scotia. And Mr. Speaker, I'm looking forward to their continued investment in this province, investment that they said will continue despite that legislation. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the NDP Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's very nice to see you again, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, many organizations have been through amalgamation in our province over the last number of years. Municipalities, school boards, healthcare organizations, and many of these amalgamations have taken place under Liberal governments. In all cases, labour issues that required resolving went to the Labour Relations Board as per Section 31 of the Trade Union Act. None have done what this government is doing. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, is why does the Premier think he knows better than every other government and organization that has faced a similar situation in the history of our province?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, over the last number of months, the Minister of Health, Department of Health, have been working with union leaders, knowing full well that we committed to restructuring healthcare in this province. Things that they had told us was they wanted all four unions to survive, Mr. Speaker. We've committed to that. No benefits that healthcare workers have earned over the past will change. All of that will be in place, Mr. Speaker. One of the things during this conversation was they didn't want runoff votes. They wanted to make sure that the disruptiveness of runoff votes wasn't going to take place and affect workplaces across this province. Indeed, that is not the case, Mr. Speaker. And furthermore, there's a structure in place that a mediator will work with them over the next 90 days to find the resolution to which union will represent the four categories that all four unions agreed to, Mr. Speaker. One of the reasons why things are working differently, Mr. Speaker, is because we actually consulted and communicated with the organizations we're involved with.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, again, my question for the Premier is, you know, unfortunately, we've been down this road before in terms of the reshuffling of health authorities in the province. And in those cases, one of the lessons, I think, that was learned was that the approach could be different. And the healthcare unions worked very hard to provide an alternative. However, they have a perfectly good process in place. It has, in fact, been used to reach resolution in the past. And so the question is really very simple to the Premier, is why is he throwing out years of experience and opting to go down an unknown route that is already causing chaos?
The Honourable Premier.
Speaker, I don't know what the Honourable Member missed. Union leaders asked that all four unions be preserved. They are. Mr. Speaker, the union leaders all agreed that there should be four categories of bargaining. They agreed to that, Mr. Speaker. They did not want runoff votes. I apparently hear now someone has changed their mind, Mr. Speaker. But the fact of the matter is this will not cause disruption across the workplaces across this province. It will ensure that workers' rights are protected. The things that they have earned in negotiations will be protected, Mr. Speaker, regardless of what is being said out there. This bill does not take away any of the earned rights that workers have in this place. What it does set forward is constructive negotiation path going forward, and it preserves the system in the long run, for all Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the New Democratic Party on her final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I always thought that in a democratic system, the fundamental building block is the right to choose, Mr. Speaker, and I find it very hard that the Premier can't see the connection between what he's doing in his legislation and this process and that basic democratic right. But, Mr. Speaker, we knew the Premier would be creating many new problems by choosing to merge district health authorities. But it seems that wasn't enough. The Premier needed to create even more problems in the way he's choosing to handle labor relations in the healthcare sector. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Premier is, why won't the Premier take the advice handed to him and start fixing issues in the healthcare system instead of creating new ones?
The Honourable Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we're looking forward to the passage of Bill 1 so that we continue down the road of tearing down the walls that have been created in the healthcare system, Mr. Speaker, that is delivering services to less than a million people. This will protect workers, Mr. Speaker. It ensures that the hard-earned benefits that they have will be there and continue to be there going into the future. It makes sure that labor negotiations going forward are not an ongoing situation, Mr. Speaker. There are four very clearly defined negotiations that will take place that I want to remind the Honourable Member that the union leaders have all agreed to. And most importantly, Mr. Speaker, this will ensure that the health care system that we all want there for our families will be affordable into the future.
Here, here. The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health. In a Herald article that I will table about the CT scanner for the Inverness Hospital, the Minister stated that there was an understanding, and I quote, an understanding that the next CT scanner the province purchased would be from GE. The tender that was piggybacked off of does not provide details on this understanding. Can the Minister please explain this understanding that locks Inverness into receiving this particular CT scanner despite questions from, including the Chief of Staff, whether or not it is the best scanner to serve the community's needs?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I guess my message yesterday didn't get out, but perhaps if the member opposite is speaking for the his entire riding and he doesn't want the scanner, I know other hospitals who would open their door tomorrow to a new scanner.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Well, it's obvious, Mr. Speaker, that the Minister feels threatened because now he's making threats against the people of Inverness. And if the Minister has such great confidence that proper procedure has been followed, why are people who are representing him refusing to provide information to the community? So, Mr. Speaker, the purchase of the CT scanner from Inverness utilized an RFP issued by the Annapolis Valley District Health Authority. The original tender was not made available on the Nova Scotia Tenders website. The community of Inverness and surrounding communities have been asking to provide the money, but have been kept in the dark about the process. So why was the tender for a $1.5 million purchase not made publicly available?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and to the member for Inverness. There is a procurement practice in the Department of Health that when an agreement is made for a very significant purchase, like a scanner, a linear accelerator, as we had ultrasounds in Antigonish required, there is the process whereby you can add to a contract future procurements, and this is exactly what we did, and it's a very open and can be examined as one of the processes to procure future equipment.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, it's strange because, as I understand, the ultrasound machines have yet to arrive in Antigonish for the use of that hospital, yet we have a CT scanner sitting in the basement of the hospital in Inverness, wrapped in plastic. because the room is not ready for it. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister go on record declaring his confidence that this procurement has been conducted in a transparent and fair manner?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
The people in the district went through every part of the process as it should be conducted in conjunction with the Department of Health and Wellness.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question this morning is for the Minister of Health. The Liberal government has become distracted by their work on the amalgamation of the district health authorities, and they really have taken their eye off what really matters, Mr. Speaker, and that's frontline care. Mr. Speaker, the annual accountability report on emergency room closures for 2013-14 is overdue. So through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister of Health, when will the Minister of Health table this year's accountability report on emergency room closures?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member for Sackville for the question. During the fall session of the legislature, that document will be tabled.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Emergency room closures were down when the Minister of Health was in opposition, and I haven't heard very much in the last year that would have continued that progress. I can't help but wonder, Mr. Speaker, if the Minister's District Health Authority amalgamation or distraction has led to an increase in emergency room closures throughout this province. So I'm wondering if the Minister could tell Nova Scotians how many hours the emergency rooms in Nova Scotia were closed so far this year.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't have that figure available, but I will certainly provide the member with that figure up to probably the end of September.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I look forward to receiving that information and look forward to seeing the accountability report. Mr. Speaker, the ER report is not the only report that the government has to bring forward and give an explanation on how things are hopefully improving in health care, Mr. Speaker. I'm talking, of course, about the mental health and addiction strategy. That, too, requires the government to give an update on that strategy. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, when will Nova Scotians get an update on the work being done to implement the mental health and addiction strategy that was adopted for the province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite and to the whole House. As many people in Nova Scotia have been taking a look at Together We Can strategy with the number of recommendations that are there, it is an ongoing implementation process. In fact, we got additional recommendations when Jana Davidson did the youth mental health report. We know that a number of these are being implemented each and every year, and over the course of this year, there will be an update on how many of the recommendations are now available to Nova Scotians. But I know that a number of those have been implemented. We have added some human resources to mental health. It's an ongoing, very, very challenging area. And I know our government added to, I think, the most critical area, and that is adding to Schools Plus and dealing with our youth, where 70% of mental health problems first appear. And that's good progress, Mr. Speaker.
Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. When this government first came to power 1 year ago, they promised to deliver care for seniors. They announced a 100-day review of the continuing care strategy. The 100-day review started 243 days ago. The minister has sat on this review for nearly 5 months, Mr. Speaker, while their families wait and wait and wait. So will the speaker or will the minister tell me, will he commit to tabling this report in this House before the session ends so that these families can know what they can look forward to in long-term care in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member for Argyle. Yes, we have to get Barrington. We have to now get Barrington in there as well. It's an important question, and the member can certainly be given what took place in the first 100 days, and I think he's aware of that, and maybe he would like for me to go through the list, but it was certainly highlighted by the fact that we put into place a refresh of the continuing care strategy, which puts emphasis on more delivery of health care in the home. And that progress is very measurable because the member, I'm surely will remember that when he was Minister of Health, there was over 5,000 hours required for home support service just in Capitol Health. That is now down to less than 1,000 hours. We are also have put in place a team that are developing a dementia strategy. This was all within the first 100 days. This is all available for the minister to be able to see. And of course, in the budget, in line with delivering more care in the home, we added $12 million this year.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you very much. And I thank the minister for his answer on that one. But, you know, a 100-day review should have a final report at some point along the way that we can, you know, look at long-term care, how it's going to be treated in the future. You know, as of September 2014, Mr. Speaker, there are 2,531 seniors on a wait list waiting for long-term care. This government has, in my view, ignored the plans for seniors in their throne speech, failed to deliver on that 100-day review, and have let that wait list grow to a record high. There are 2,531 individuals with 2,531 families eagerly awaiting for some relief from this government. So my question to the minister is, what can the minister say to those thousands of families that are waiting to get their loved ones into the correct care that they do so deserve?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much. And the member asked a very good question. You know, when we did the 100-day review, we outlined three of the major areas that we would focus on. And one of the areas that I can assure the member is that number for nursing homes will come down because we'll be providing care right in the home. And that's where the vast majority of Nova Scotians want to receive care. 92% of Nova Scotians now get care there. And if the member had asked me, I could have given him an updated statistic because we have brought that list down to less than by 100 just in the last few months.
The Honourable Member for Argyle Barrington on his final supplementary.
Thank you. I've got the list, and quite honestly, there are 2,000 people waiting for long-term care. Out of that 2,000, there are, 271 of those that are lying in hospital beds today. And we know what happens when someone is in that hospital bed. I mean, there is no other place for them right now, but of course, they are not in the appropriate level of care, and quite honestly, you know, that acute care bed should be used for what it is an acute care bed so that people can get their surgeries and things that they need. But our system is blocked up with that. So my question to the minister is, you know, what is your plan to open up those 271 beds so that they can be used for the services that they are, such as acute care.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And one of the other, I think, realities that we should point out to the members and to all Nova Scotians is that during the past year, somewhere between 25 and 30% of all those on the wait list who were called weren't ready to go into a nursing home. So in some ways, people are taking out some early insurance that they will get on the list. We are working first and foremost to have a strong criteria, a strong assessment, so that the right people are going into our nursing homes. In terms of getting people out of hospital and into the right facility, we now have a number of restorative programs across the province, and this is the kind of care that we need in place, is to help people transition back to home, or could even be back to a nursing home. But the restorative care program that we see in Spring Hill, which was really a model for the province, we have it at Digby General and a number of other hospitals, and this is going to help take relief on the acute care bed.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would think that everyone in this chamber would agree that our paramedics, firefighters, law enforcement officers, and other emergency responders play an important role in protecting and treating all Nova Scotians. So, Mr. Speaker, what steps has the Minister of Health taken to support and improve the working conditions for our emergency responders?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And this is a very important ongoing area to make sure that those who are delivering direct care to our patients. I guess in one of those areas, we will have a development during the fall session that I believe is going to be a wonderful assist to paramedics and their future. And so I would say to the former paramedic, stay tuned.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I look forward to that. Mr. Speaker, across Canada in the last 6 months, 23 emergency responders have taken their own lives. That number includes loss of emergency responders from our own province here in Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, it's our duty to protect those who protect us. Right now, the Workers' Compensation Act only recognizes a post-traumatic stress disorder if it occurs immediately following a traumatic event. So I'd like to ask the Minister, Mr. Speaker, does the Minister recognize the need to update legislation and policy pertaining to WCB in order to properly support our emergency responders who are diagnosed with PTSD?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the member opposite. And he raises a really significant question. And it's one that has not been addressed, I don't think, in the fullest manner, and one that, in fact, I will take under advisement that perhaps through amendment, we can, in fact, make sure that when somebody requires that kind of help, either immediately or people who have gone through some trauma and even years later. I know in my community recently, I had a fireman come to me and ask me if he knew of somebody in the mental health system who provided that very kind of help. And because we live in a military community, we were able to have somebody with that kind of expertise willing to take on somebody who, again, there's a great collegiality among firemen and complementary services they share on the base. But in terms of our province and the bigger question, I thank the former minister for raising that in the chamber tonight.
The honourable member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the minister. I know first responders across and emergency responders across Nova Scotia look forward to working as we move forward. It's my sincere hope, Mr. Speaker, that political differences can be set aside for the benefit of all current and future emergency responders in our province. So I'd like to ask the minister, will the Minister of Health commit to meeting with myself and emergency responders about making Nova Scotia the most inclusive province in the country regarding coverage to cope with post-traumatic stress disorder?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is an area that I can certainly communicate with the member about a positive direction that we can take a look at.
The Honourable Member for Northside, Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Community Services. Mr. Speaker, the Cape Breton Victoria Child Advocacy Society held a town hall gathering in Sydney this past Saturday called Speaking for Nova Scotia's Children at Risk. Close to 100 engaged citizens came together to seek solutions to the perils of our most vulnerable youth at risk. Advocates are seeking two real actions for positive change. The first is to change the age of the definition of youth from 16 to 18 years, and the second is to establish an office and a commissioner for the rights of children. So my question to the ministers, do you agree that our fellow Nova Scotians who care, and are you prepared to make the changes necessary to better protect our children at risk?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I thank the member for the question. I know it's the topic is very near and dear to his heart as it is to mine. It is actually part of exciting new legislation that it will be coming forward in the next couple of years. As you know, there's been 15 or 8 different reports over the last 15 years looking in consultations to try to change the Child and Family Services Act. And I have said it's part of my mandate. I have said very clearly and very decisively that that act will be opened up within my mandate and it will be changed. And actually the definition of child will be actually raised to 19. Because I know that many children right now between the ages of 16 and 19 fall into that sort of no man's land of gap within the Act. There's many other different changes I'm looking at, including the definition of neglect, which I believe is fairly outdated in the Act and needs to represent the changes of child family welfare in the province of Nova Scotia today.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his first supplementary.
And I thank you for that, Madam Minister. I guess my next question would be, if we're going to raise the age up to 19, can we expect that to happen in the near future, or how long do you expect it's going to take for that to happen?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I have a schedule for the legislation that I'm bringing forward, and I believe that that is going to be in either the spring or the fall of 2016. It is currently being researched now, taking all the reports that have happened over the last number of years and making sure that no stone is unturned. I know it's a difficult act to open up. I know there's lots of consultation that has happened. It will continue to happen, but I am committed to it. The Premier is committed to it. It was part of the mandate for my department when I became minister. And it's something, quite frankly, that is long overdue.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his final supplementary.
I'm glad to hear there's a set timeline, Madam Minister. I hope it can be set on time. I hope it can be sooner than that, because ignoring the children at risk costs everybody, but most importantly, those who are abused, neglected, and or rejected. The price of a lost life to inaction is a price that Nova Scotians can't afford to pay, so the sooner the better. My next question is, will the government do the right thing and establish an officer and a commissioner for the rights of children?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
When the Attorney General's recommendations came out recently and in the past, we are up to 20 out of 23 recommendations. We are looking at I really want to focus on the act because I believe when you have legislative teeth, and no one knows better than myself of what children go through in this province with my previous work experience. So my concentration right now is on that act to make sure that it's ironclad, that it is truly, truly in the best interest of the children. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister responsible to the status of women. So, Mr. Speaker, through you, over the last days as critic for the status of women, I've been hearing from many women of various ages from across the province. And while they differ in life experience, they've all expressed grave concerns that their human rights as women are being stripped away by the actions of this government. I know that the Minister of the Status of Women desires, as I do, to help improve life for women and girls in this province. So my question through you, Mr. Speaker, to the Minister is this. How will the Minister ensure that the rights of working women in Nova Scotia will be maintained and protected in spite of the actions being taken by her government with respect to the health amalgamation?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
I've actually listened to some of the rhetoric that's been happening around this, and I really find the assertion quite nonsensical. I don't think it's helpful analysis whatsoever. I think that when you put energy, time, and the commitment that this government has put into a sustainable healthcare system, that you are as pro-woman, as pro-child, as pro-Nova Scotian as you can get.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, a number of women in my constituency have written to me stating that they are very satisfied with their job, their salary, and their benefits. They tell me that their relationship with their patients is extremely important to them. However, they are strongly opposed to this government's actions based on their concern for democracy under the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, Section 2D, which affirms their individual right to freedom of association. So my question through you to the Minister is this. Can the Minister please explain how the Premier's proposal to organize the health merger will be better for everyone in the long run, as he has stated, since so many women feel that government dictating their choices is undemocratic?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the status of women.
I must have missed something in the last many hours of being here, but at no point in time have I ever read in this legislation that the freedom for association is being taken away. But I will tell you, if the Honourable Member will remember, what this government has done for women in the last year, namely increased funding to family resource centres, women's centres, transition houses, second stage housing, and has done more for the organizations that serve women on the ground that are in crisis more than any government in the last decade.
The Honourable Member for Truro, Bible Hill, Millbrook, Salmon River on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for your response to the Minister. I actually feel quite proud that our government also did a lot for women in this province and, in fact, raised their money that they were receiving for the first time in 20 years, I believe it was. So, since 80% of women in the in the healthcare workforce are women, they're feeling right now that they're under attack and they're feeling very vulnerable. So how does the Minister justify supporting actions that they say will cause distrust, dissatisfaction, and disillusionment in the workforce?
The Honourable Minister responsible for the status of women.
I'm sorry that they feel like that. I really don't see that analysis in this bill. And quite frankly, I'm quite familiar with gender-based analysis on any policy. But I'm concerned also with the 50% of the population of Nova Scotia that need a long-term and healthy, sustainable health care system to meet all of their health needs.
The Honourable Member for Kings North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Fisheries. Mr. Speaker, the Maritime Lobster Panel report recommended a deadline of August 2014 to determine support for the lobster levy. That date is long past, and we are still no further ahead in determining that support. Instead of consulting fishermen and organizing a vote, the minister created chaos and distrust among the fishermen and processors by announcing a 5-cent lobster tax in a mystery zone. Mr. Speaker, my question for the minister is, will the minister continue the charade of secrecy, or will he tell fishermen today where the mystery zone is located?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
I'm very pleased with that question from the Honourable Member. And indeed, we've made significant progress in a pilot project in the lobster industry that's going to be led by the industry itself. That's something that's never happened in the history of the province of Nova Scotia before. We're very proud of that. And as of yesterday, we've got a letter of intent signed by all parties.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the lobster industry is very important to this province, and the Maritime Lobster Panel report deserves the support of the industry. And unfortunately, by creating this, by mentioning the 5-cent tax, the minister has made it less likely that the industry will support this levy. Will the minister let us know where this will happen? Where will the 5-cent levy be implemented?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Well, as the member may not recall, but there was a talk about having a 5-cent levy on the pilot project only. And we will continue to work with the organization that we've signed a letter of intent with around that, and exactly how we'll do that will be revealed very shortly.
The Honourable Member for Kings North on his final supplementary.
Thank you to the Minister, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Maritime Lobster Panel report and the 2-cent levy are very important moments in the history of the lobster industry in this province, and when will the minister take the steps recommended in the Maritime Lobster Panel report? Why is he letting the time slip away on that?
The Honourable Minister of Fisheries.
Thank you very much for the question. It's very important that we consult with industry. We've started that process, and there is some objection from people in the industry around the levy, and we intend to consult with the industry more before we decide exactly how we're going to proceed with this, but we will be proceeding with it.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations. Mr. Speaker, in August, the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia, and his five-member entourage took a trip to CBRM. Mr. Speaker, the CBRM residents were hopeful that the minister would bring some good news and tell everyone the Liberal government had finally gotten off its hands and taken action to speed up local infrastructure projects. But the minister let everybody down by not addressing his government's long delays and instead told the municipality would have to resubmit their traffic counts in order to have their project considered and moved along. Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, why did the minister insult CBRM residents by wasting their time and getting their hopes up when a simple phone call would have done?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia and Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd be pleased to work with my colleague to demonstrate with him and to him effective communications in government. The residents of Cape Breton and the mayor in particular was quite pleased that government attended their community to have open, honest dialogue about the issues before them. My colleague speaks to traffic counts. There is a process. We're committed to following processes. It's called transparency and accountability. And for the benefit of my colleague, the application for the Bill Canada Fund has been submitted. And a key contributing factor to that was the very discussions that we had with CBRM.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, that's an expensive communication lesson, very expensive communication lesson. And to say that it would take simple phone calls, my understanding, Mr. Speaker, is the minister wouldn't take the municipality's phone calls when this started to happen about the infrastructure. And not only did the minister waste more time that day, he also wasted our money. Thanks to a Freedom of Information request, we have learned the true cost of the minister's road trip. The cost to taxpayers cost $1,881.12, all that a simple phone call could have made. So my question to the minister is, since Cape Breton's infrastructure continues to crumble while the minister sees fit to take his entourage on an almost $1,900 road trip, I ask my question on behalf of the CBRM and Nova Scotia taxpayers. Can we have our money back, please?
The Honourable Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can tell you it was indeed a pleasure to travel to Cape Breton Regional Municipality and meet with the Mayor and full council. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, 52 municipalities that I've traveled to and visited, and I've met face-to-face with our municipal leaders and their senior staff. And I would not treat CBRM any different.
The Honourable Member for Northside Westmount on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it seems like pricey road trips with little to show for them are becoming a hallmark of this government. Mr. Speaker, only a few weeks ago it was revealed the Minister of Natural Resources put taxpayers on the hook for an $8,700 trip to Boston. For two trips to Boston. Now we see the Minister of Service Nova Scotia spending $1,900 that a simple phone call would have tripped. So my question to the Minister, will he apologize to Cape Bretoners for his pointless $1,900 road trip and urge his Cabinet colleagues to be more respectful of taxpayer dollars?
The Honourable Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said earlier, it was indeed a pleasure to travel to Cape Breton Regional Municipality and meet with the Mayor and full council, as well as their senior staff. Matter of fact, it was the second trip I made to Cape Breton to ensure that there was open, honest dialogue and clarity to the issues on the table.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question for the Minister of Transportation. Without having to undergo a Freedom of Information request, could the Minister tell us if there was a plan to pave rural roads in northern Inverness County before the government sold the government-owned paving plant?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the Honourable Member. Of course, there is a plan. The member knows I actually did a road trip with the member this summer. We looked at some critical roads in the Inverness County area. Certainly, there's some infrastructure challenges in Mabu and in surrounding areas and everywhere in our province, quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, given the deficit we have. Basically, the plan in many instances for local roads is that they flow through the department. There's much stakeholder consultation. Everyone has an opinion on which road should be done next, so that's funneled through the department. The department puts together the specs, the information, the details. It becomes part of the planning for each fiscal year. We obviously have our large-scale capital plan as well as the local roads plan. So we do everything we can to get that information on the table, Mr. Speaker, and we certainly don't make any exceptions for Inverness. We're going to do everything we can to fix up those roads.
Thank you. Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the government paving plant and that program, it was a special program. There were areas that benefited significantly from it, rural areas that sometimes have difficulty making the requirements. I know, as the Minister stated, there certainly is a process to get a road paved, and respect that. But, Mr. Speaker, if there was money allotted, and granted it was in the form of a paving plant, my question would be, there's potential that it could still be allotted in the form of a package of roads going to tender. And if it was a priority for the previous government, through efforts made by myself and local management at transportation, could it once again be a priority for this government to pave a package of roads in northern Inverness County sometime soon?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do thank the member for the question. Obviously, we've been very clear on our position on the paving plant. We are happy to remove that asset from our fleet, for sure. But, Mr. Speaker, the member does highlight a significant point, and one of the issues with the rural paving is that we were as a government, the previous government and all the governments that came before them, we were putting out tenders for very small pieces of road in rural areas, so the economics didn't make sense. As the member would know, and I'm sure their party supports, with respect to the Ivany report, with respect to what we want to do with the private sector, it's the road builders that do this the best in this province and in this country. We've got some of the best road builders, without question. So one of the deficiencies within the Department of Transportation was that we weren't packaging those tenders, Mr. Speaker. So the member makes an excellent point, and we're certainly endeavouring to do that with this year's capital plan as we move forward into the 2015 fiscal year. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there are many roads throughout Inverness County that need paving. But I do think of the northern areas of Shettycamp and Margaree, those regions specifically, and I know... we were quite hopeful that there was some paving coming, and we had some indication that there was. Those roads are still there, and they still do need to be paved. So I would impress it upon the minister and the government, because the minister can't do his job without your support, to ensure that there is a budget available for this kind of paving, because there was a need before as seen under the previous government, and it had been identified for Northern Inverness County. So I will ask the minister, will you continue to impress it upon your colleagues so that we can receive some paving in Northern Inverness County, certainly in the next year or two?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, when we did that road tour, I think that the member opposite got an appreciation for truly how the department works. We did have a representative from TIR, one of the local managers, who certainly understands the needs in the Inverness area, in the county, and in Cape Breton. And, you know, the reality is that they work hard to get their priorities on the table as well. So we are looking at the local roads in Inverness and for all areas of the province, and we're going to do our very best. And I know the member will have me up for another road tour in the summer of 2015. So I look forward to that. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Sydney Whitney Pier, or pardon me, Sackville Cobequid.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not going to ask for a road tour. Our roads in Sackville Cobequid fall under the municipality's responsibility. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health. In 2011, after heeding the warning from Dr. John Ross on emergency care in Nova Scotia, the NDP government decided it was time to think outside the box. The idea of collaborative emergency center was born when plans began to open these centres in rural areas of our province. So I'd like to ask the Minister of Health, can he please tell us what his thoughts are on collaborative emergency centres in the province of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And that was one of the areas that I wasn't surprised at, but when I did the tour last winter, in most of the communities that have a CEC, there was full confirmation of how well it was working, and it was a great example of primary health care, getting same day, next day, which really, you know, was the right answer. Those communities didn't need a fully personed ER. There were many benefits, actually. And one team of doctors that I met in Tatamagoosh said it really confirmed their future and their commitment to Tatamagoosh and area. So right now we're waiting for Mary Jane Hampton's report to take a look at. She's doing an analysis of how the CECs are working. There are a few areas that may have perhaps changed the model slightly, but the commitment to the CEC is indeed very strong.
The Honourable Member for Sackville Cobequid on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, in 2012, a collaborative emergency center was announced for Lunenburg, an area which suffers from chronically understaffed and often closed emergency room. Unfortunately, the Minister of Health has put emergency services on the back burner while he tries to figure out how amalgamating the district health authorities will happen, Mr. Speaker. So my question through you to the Minister of Health, Can he please tell us when his department will follow through and open the Lunenburg CEC?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I'm pleased to inform the member opposite and all the House that I've had Dr. John Ross in to take a look at where we are, where we need to go, and not every CEC needs to have the exact same model. I'm hearing from Lunenburg that a family practice offering, as opposed to keeping their emergency room open, that CEC model with some variation may work extremely well there. That is, while we can say under review, we will be addressing and hopefully next fiscal year. And after Mary Jane Hampton's report, we'll be able to decide what the best model for Lunenburg will be well into the future.
The Honourable Member for Sackville-Cobequid on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I'm a bit concerned because in the initial response I got, the Minister acknowledged the success of CECs across the province. And a lot of work, time and energy was put in to the announcement for the Collaborative Emergency Center in Lunenburg. A lot of work, Mr. Speaker, from a number of people who work within healthcare. And I feel it a bit unfortunate that at this time, we're almost a year after the government took over the reins, Mr. Speaker, that we still don't see a Collaborative Emergency Center there or some version of it. Because I would agree that each area of the province, each community, has a different need, and that was really why I think the collaborative emergency model worked. That input from that community focused and formed what was going to be there. So I hope and I plead with the minister that he doesn't have to wait for a review to continue on with the opening of a collaborative emergency center in Lunenburg. So I ask him again, will he give a timeline on when the people of Lunenburg and surrounding areas will see movement on the collaborative emergency center for their community?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And sometimes you get the question, the urging from the opposition. But sometimes you get it coming from a very conscientious MLA for Lunenburg. And I believe, as the member opposite, that CEC with different variations, different models in different communities is, in fact, the way that we will be going. We know that there are several other sites as well. And I believe the report from Mary Jane Hampton, she's very, very astute at analyzing healthcare requirements. I'm prepared because she is going to be providing that document very shortly. It's just about ready for publication. When we take a look at that, I think we'll be also in a place where we can announce with a very definitive timeline what Lunenburg can expect for its future. I know that the District Health Authority had to get a collaborative health center in Bridgewater because, again, they had difficulty attracting doctors. That's been put in place. It was started under the previous government. They are attracting new clinicians, including doctors and nurse practitioners to the area. So we'll have a definitive date on Lunenburg very shortly.
The Honourable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Thank you. Let me do this quick. Okay, it's all right.
Order, please. Order, please. The Honorable House Leader for the Official Opposition.
Can't believe it was that popular. 103 overpasses to the Minister of Transportation. 103 overpasses, go.
The Honorable Minister of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to thank the Honorable Member for the question. You know, as you know, what time are you guys? At 1:11? Yeah. Mr. Speaker, the 103 overpasses and the bridges and the structures is something that the member has taken to the legislature via petition, so I know it's important to his community. We actually do have a number of pieces of the 103 that we're looking at now. There is about a 14-kilometre strip that looks like it could be part of the capital plan in the very near future, and I know that's part of what the community is asking for. Our local guy on the ground, Steve McIsaac, has done a tremendous job looking at the priorities. And, you know, look, it's an important corridor for the province. We take the highway infrastructure very seriously, Mr. Speaker, and we know that we want to ensure the safety of all Nova Scotians. So it is a priority for us, and I really do appreciate the question, Mr. Speaker. And look, we're here to answer questions, so I'm glad the member brought this to my attention, and we'll look into it. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Order, please.
The time allotted for oral questions has expired. I now recognize the Honourable Government House Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that you do now leave the chair and that the committee resolve itself into a committee of the whole House on bills.
The House will now recess for a brief 2 minutes while we resolve into the committee of the whole House.